of certification of compliance with Wisconsin open meetings law?
Yes, it is in compliance.
Okay. Number two, 2019 reports and 2020 program plans.
All right. Tonight we're going to kind of give you a broader view of overall our programs, and what we find is helpful is for colleagues to get a chance to hear each other while sharing with the committee both what the highlights were from 2019 as well as what the plan is for going into 2020. So you can give feedback on if you find this useful, if we should do it again next February or not. But we're going to kick off with who's first? Lee.
Agriculture.
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, my 2019 highlights, I just kind of picked the things that brought the most joy to me.
My work. Yeah.
First of all, starting
with... It was hard to whittle it down.
Yes.
Right?
It was.
One page.
Starting with kids first, which, you know, I got to work with a lot of them in 2019. You can see there in the brightly colored shirts was our 2019 class of tractor safety graduates. So,
yeah. Can you see it?
Yeah. They're all kind of piled up.
We need
up
a big
on
screen
a
over there.
There. So, we had a big class. They all passed and made it through. So, they're safe to drive and operate on public roadways. Very important. So, if you run into them, hopefully they know the rules of the road.
Don't run into them.
Yep, not literally. And then also trained probably about 180 or so kids on meat animal quality assurance through the Youth for Quality and Care of Animals program, which is a new national program that fairs are implementing to help their kids realize that even though they're, you know, maybe showing a couple of animals, eventually they do go into the food chain and they need to be responsible producers just like some of the larger scale farms in the area are. So that program continues this year. We have our first session tomorrow night. Also did a fair amount of farm succession education in 2019. Those tend to be not reach as many families, but it seems like we're seeing a lot of the families kind of come successively to these programs, so that's a good thing. It means they're working on their plans. They're actually trying to make a succession plan, which many farms, you know, grandpa dies and that's when the succession begins. So we're trying to kind of help them prepare for that instead of being reactive. We distributed 25,000 copies of the Farm Fresh Atlas, which is a local food guide throughout the region. We're promoting our online resource, farmfreshatlas.org. So we don't have to print as many, but we still have a lot of copies that go to libraries and other places, reaching people that might have trouble getting on the internet. Did a lot of conservation education with farmers through our local watershed protection group. So you can see there in the middle, that's from the summer's field day, working with farmers to educate them on no-till practices and cover crops. So what you see there is called a soil pit, and it's a common educational tool used at these events. We dig down, you can kind of see the soil horizons, and you can see how a farm that operates using no-till and cover crops, you can actually see kind of the soil quality indicators by taking that sort of view. And then just educating clientele on emerging issues that pop up. Extension, we're meant to be responsive to things that just crop up. So a lot of things this year included our wet spring. What options did farmers have to plant if they couldn't get corn or soybeans in? What cover crops were options for them? And then also different crop insurance rules, trying to get them up to speed so they could at least get something out of this year. So a lot of farms this year, all they got in terms of income came from either the federal government through crop insurance or through the federal farm program. So this year was a big year for that. Yes.
So the cover crop that went in the farms like that had the daisies and the radishes.
Yep. And they're still standing around here.
Yeah. So they'll just till those under a few weeks before planting. Is that what they do?
Yeah. That's. I mean, hopefully this year.
If there's.
Yeah. Hopefully. I mean, that's what a lot of farmers are worried about this year is that they've got either cover crops still in the field or weeds popped up, and hopefully this spring there's actually time to get in because you don't want those things just to kind of sit there. So yeah, that's the idea. So we had a winter workshop last week, and that a lot of the questions were on that because we had so many. Racine and Kenosha County had the highest percentages of prevented plant acres throughout the state, so we were hit real hard. Hemp, of course, continues to be a popular subject, so we did some educational sessions on that. Invasive species outreach, we actually have a trial of different management practices going on right along 45 next to the county center building here. And then we invited municipalities to come and learn about best management practices for controlling some of our most problematic invasives.
We did planting.
So teasel is the one in particular that, we were working on. It's like the, it has a seed head that looks really like prickly, if you've noticed it. I don't know. So that's all around here. That's the species that we use, but it covered more than that. So, and then I continue to work on a statewide produce safety project, educating growers about federal food safety regulations that are actually affecting growers of smaller scale. So we did a number of educational workshops, and then I also went out to farms to do on-farm readiness reviews to help them prepare for potential audits in the future. So for 2020, I just kind of, again, picked things that are highlights. They're not totally comprehensive of the work that I'll be doing this year, but I am heading up a statewide work group focused on farm diversification to help farmers explore new enterprises other than just dairy or just crops, because I think this year farmers really felt that maybe they should be kind of considering some other enterprises to manage risk a little bit better. We'll be doing more programming specifically for female farmers, including an upcoming workshop called Heart of the Farm. And then continuing the rural landowner education, our annual prairie walk, that's a picture at the bottom. We had a really great one this last year partnering with the Chicago Field Museum. So we've always got a different topic that we focus on. And then just continue to address whatever pops up in 2020. Who knows? Hemp is going to continue. That's one thing. I got so many calls on that this year. But I think once people realize that the market's tanked, and that I heard last week that only 6% of what was grown this year in Wisconsin has actually been sold. Yes.
So yeah, speaking to that, I was talking with a farm that grew it, and they said they're sitting on most of it.
Yep.
So they started to press it themselves, because, correct me if I'm wrong, you still can't transport across state lines?
I think you have to have like a certain permit or something.
Right, so
yep.
I think they're hindered by
it's
that.
It's very restrictive,
and so they
yep.
found a place in Racine that presses other things.
Yeah.
They said we'll try it, so I know they're doing that now. But somebody that they were talking to said that it's so flooded right now, it's not worth it.
Well, I think they said, I heard something like the whole market only needed, like to satisfy the current market that we have, the infrastructure that we have, they needed 20,000 acres across the United States.
Cool.
And I think I don't know what the figure was in Wisconsin, but we had, I mean, pretty close to that. So it's like, it just kind of, and you know, input prices are still high for seed and everything like that, but there's no market for it. We really need to establish
right.
that.
And do we know what, do you have any idea what the payout percentage is? Because I know the same farm I was talking to said they're still waiting on crop insurance to pay out in 2018.
Well,
I helped them
yeah.
reach out a few different ways, but I know
for federal
crop insurance, they're waiting for 2018. Substantial, you know, over $100,000, where I know they've reached out to the congressmen, both senators.
Yep, I'm not sure what that's all Farm Service Agency stuff. I know the deadline for reporting on 2019, or for electing programs for 2019 and 2020 is coming up, so it might in March, so it might be after that. Federal government right now and the Farm Service Agency is in quite a quagmire, so it's a whole other thing, but.
About farm bankruptcy, there's been a lot of discussion about that.
Yeah, I.
How's the local market for that?
I would say locally, it's where we've seen a lot of bankruptcies is with the dairies, especially even large dairies of all sizes. So since we don't have a ton of that in the area, I mean, a few farms went out, but some of them were kind of just, you know, they didn't really see a future just generally, but it wasn't because they went bankrupt. So. But that was mostly the dairy industry was a large contributor to the amount of bankruptcies. Yep.
Any feedback on what the MCA is going to do?
I think it's positive. I haven't really
heard.
Hasn't
been any specifics.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't followed it as much as I probably should.
But no, on the dairy side of things, just dairy usage is down quite a bit, except for like cheese.
Yep, cheese is always a good market, but fluid milk has been down for years, and it probably will continue to go that way. So. So for health and well-being, in 2019, one of my personal highlights is I completed my first year with Extension, so that was exciting. And then really my programming areas have come into focus with two larger topics of financial education and behavioral health. So previously I probably referred to that as social-emotional well-being, but within Extension statewide, they have utilize the header of behavioral health more in the recent past. But with financial education programming, a lot of it in 2019 was more focused on groups that already existed or working with agencies that had clientele in mind that they would want to have the financial education. So within the local homeless shelter at the Shalom Center, I worked with clientele of more than 50 people throughout the year. And then within the Housing Authority, I did three programs with them. Some of them were repeat attendees because it was different topics, but saw more than 60 people at those. And with the Head Start families, it was partnering with the Kenosha Unified School District's Head Start programming, which has 11 sites. So we were able to distribute monthly newsletters to over 300 of the families, and we scheduled two in-person workshops. I'm working with them again this year, and then I just was contacted, so this is kind of leaking into 2020, but was contacted by West OSHA Head Start with some interest in being able to do some financial education programming with their families, so that will be to come this year. And then with the behavioral health topics,
education or whatever, do we follow these people through and see, are we effective? Do we need to make changes or tweaks? I mean, are we constantly looking at making improvements to our system to help get more people through graduating or using it or at least attempting to work through it? Do we follow or measure results?
It really is not beyond the scope of when they're involved with the programming. So, like, for instance, with the Head Start families, we did beginning of the year and end of the year surveys. With the Housing Authority clients, it was with the same fixed group of the Family Self-Sufficiency Program. But they are on a track of about 5 years within the program.
I guess that's what I'm getting at is, you know, so we get them through, they're doing real well. Okay, what about the next year? If they're not coming back and getting more, are we assuming they're doing great, or are we going back and tracking all the way through? And have these things actually helped them, or is there something more we could be doing in education to, you know, propagate?
I haven't done anything long-term at this point. I think it would be really difficult with some of the audiences, especially like at the homeless shelter, because it's such a transient population. I mean, I've had a lot of contact with like the staff at the agencies just to get feedback on their input of programming and what they would like to see for the clients in the future. But keeping kind of the long-term scope in mind it's definitely something, because I want to make sure that whatever it is that I'm providing is effective and useful for people.
And I can understand working with the staff on it. I would think we need to work with people who are actually, you know, trying to do what it is they're trying to do to elevate themselves. What are some of the things that we might be missing or could be changing as well with them, and getting that type of feedback? And I guess we wouldn't know that unless we go back and see what we were doing in the past and seeing if it's been effective and what else we might need to change to make it more effective.
Right. So I think one thing that I could do to take a look at that on a more long-term focus, especially when I'm collaborating with other agencies, is to see, not necessarily trying to track down the clients, but within contact with the agencies, did they then come back with the same issues, or was there other things that were going on?
Yeah, and I guess I'm not looking for the individual as much as I'm just looking for hey, you know, 40 people went through this.
Mm-hmm.
They went through everything in 2018, and we haven't seen any in return, for one. But also, it does look like these people are doing what they wanted or expected to do.
Sure.
But I guess I'm not trying to name names as much as it's just saying, do we have good data on the effectiveness of the program?
Mm-hmm.
Going to hear that a lot from me, by the way. So.
Sure. So for long term, I don't. And part of that is just because I haven't been doing programming here long term at this point. But that is definitely something.
It's a measure I think that should be at least attempted.
Yeah.
You know, and if it can be properly done and get good information. If not, then it doesn't make any sense. But what gets measured gets improved.
And then within behavioral health topics with 2019, it was mostly with a concentration focused on trauma-informed care, youth mental health, stress reduction, and mindfulness. And looking ahead to 2020 plans, continuing with a lot of the financial education partners that I have been working with in 2019, but additionally, being able to provide financial education services to incarcerated populations. So I recently started working with the Kenosha Correctional Center through kind of the work that Christine has done with their center. And a lot of the logic behind them wanting to bring in financial education was they are a minimum security prison, and they're very focused on work and work release and work readiness. So when I talked with the superintendent within the center, she said that a lot of the guys are, you know, on Huber and working full-time jobs, and the state is overseeing income at that point. So they're taking off kind of the room and board for the incarceration, any restitution they have to pay, any child support. But beyond that, the lion's share of their income is then held in an account by the state. So sometimes when they complete their incarceration and are getting released into the community, they have upwards of $30,000, $40,000 after they've been working a number of years. So she wanted to ready them in the best way possible to be able to manage that kind of money, as well as a lot of times these guys are exiting with permanent jobs at that point. So then when they don't have that oversight of the state deciding where all the money goes, that they would be better positioned to be able to manage those daily things.
Okay. So when someone's out on Huber, it sounds like the employers actually pay the state. Is that correct?
They're paying the individual, but the state holds the money.
So John Doe is getting the check, but he has to give it to the state.
I don't think it goes to him.
Okay, so they're paying the
probably
state.
Direct deposit.
Yeah, but it is for him.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
I never thought of that. And wow, if they're coming out with $30,000, they could easily get into trouble with.
Yes.
That. So that's outstanding that we're teaching them how to be responsible.
Yeah, and that was something that they wanted to bring in. It's a very low key. It's prison, but it's a very kind of, at this point, most of the guys are kind of on the end of their sentence. So they're in a mind focus of wanting to work and wanting to think toward the future and being able to assist with some of the daily skills that they might not have gotten when they were younger, I think is going to be helpful.
Let me ask our youth and governance, do you guys get financial education?
Our school added the class this year, and now it's required for every class after.
And what school is that?
Christian Life School.
Okay, Christian.
And after...
Has a financial literacy class or something that's required.
Yeah, see, I don't know if they're required, but I know they have.
Hers is required.
Ours is required now.
Okay.
And it varies by school district. So after I started, I know that was something that was discussed within the committee, so I did reach out to local school districts, and the state DPI, so the Department of Public Instruction, they have standards for that, but then school districts can take it upon themselves to go with the baseline standard or kind of take it more. So it really varies. So additionally, also working with developmentally disabled adults and then helping professionals. So this would be focused more on the staff.
that are client facing. So that's something statewide that Extension has been working on, is developing curriculum so that that frontline staff would have good general information about financial education, which then they can disperse to the folks that they see on a regular basis. And behavioral health education will continue to increase engagement with educators, youth, parents and caregivers, older adults, and local community members. So one of the state teams through Extension that I'm working with, they are going to be having a training for different educators around the state that is youth focused. So it's a curriculum that would then be brought into middle or high schools. And it really is to help them be able to deal with emotions and behaviors and some of the self-care techniques, so that if they are having difficulties in school or just in life in general, that they would, the idea is that then they would be able to manage that before it got out of control or needed to be in some sort of disciplinary action. And then the last thing is, I'll just pass this around. So the mental health first aid course is something that I've been doing locally. So we have one coming up at the end of February. If you have anyone or yourself that might be interested, we are being hosted at Aurora Hospital on Highway 50. And there's information about the two courses that are being offered in tandem. But it would be a great opportunity to be able to, just as a citizen or in your professional sense, be able to have more skills and knowledge about interacting with folks that might be struggling with mental health.
Is this something I can post at work?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's open to the public. Okay. Yep. And at the hospital, we thought that was a good location between city and county.
Thank you.
Okay. Move on to who's next? BJ.
Hello, everyone. My name is BJ Kandian. I'm a horticulture extension educator, and I've been in this position for almost 10 months. And this is a regional position. It's the first time they're piloting in the state. And in this regional position, my appointment time in Kenosha County is 30%, Reston County is 30%, and Milwaukee County is 40%. So in Kenosha County and the Central region, I spent quite a bit of time trying to understand the position, as well as trying to understand the need, the horticulture need in this Milwaukee-Kenosha Racing area. I spent quite a bit chunk of my time trying to work with our Master Gardener volunteers who are involved heavily in providing diagnostic service with the consumers, trying to understand what their needs, and trying to provide some technical support to the master gardeners so that the client gets more research-based information and accurate information what they're dealing with. So in one of the major portion of my time is to understand how the plant health advising office works in three different counties. And they're all a bit different in a sense how they operate, and the timing, hours, you know, it all varies between county by county. But overall, in Kenosha County, last year in 2019, the Master Gardeners have reached out to about more than 240 residents. And this includes emails, calls, walk-ins, and stuff. We also had a booth at the Kenosha Harvest Market once a month, and our Master Gardeners provided resources and information to approximately an average of 80 residents. In a per month from June to September. One of the common questions that we faced last year, and many people were wondering why their trees simply failed. They were healthy, perfectly fine for 20, 25 years, but they did not bud up. And we faced this calamity not only on woody ornamentals, but also including our fruit trees too. And one of the major reasons is this goes back to the winter, because we didn't have enough snow cover, and then we had a polar vortex that also wiped out, you know, most of the trees. So many people were wondering why the trees fell. That was the biggest question that we got last year among the Kenosha and Racine County residents. And then I have also had an opportunity to work with the Master Gardeners to create a garden YouTube videos in bilingual. And it was a very thrilling experience for me because to generate a YouTube video is, you know, and show them a live demonstration how to build a raised bed garden and how to plant the tomatoes. And we did a lot of received a lot of comments on online about those things too. So it was, and also, you know, sharing that YouTube video with my colleague was also interesting because they also had an opportunity to provide some inputs on all those things. And these YouTube videos have been published out of a Learning Store Extension website. They had a compilation of all the YouTube videos from different extension education programs. So it's been housed in that.
Hey, they do want to redo your lawn. Okay,
then do one.
I need that.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of things that there's a good opportunity. One is about on lawns, and one is also about native prairies because a lot of people are interested about bees and pollinators, how to conserve those things, and also about organic gardening, you know, all those things. So there's a lot of potential opportunities there. So, yeah. And then I had an opportunity to you know, create more educational content, which is really needed in the statewide. So I was able to, in a manuscript about 3 extension fact sheet, which is under peer review right now. I'm hoping anytime it will get published and it'll be published on our horticulture team website in the statewide. And beginning in mid-June, I started writing garden columns for the Kenosha News. It took me a while to get connected to the Kenosha County News because they were also in the transition process, so they couldn't able to reach out to me on time. And then I was partnering, I partnered with our 4-H youth educator, and I was thrilled to take our, you know, to be part of the YMCA summer camp. And they had about more than 100 kids, and along with our 4-H youth educator, I was able to create some awareness about invasive species in the camp center, which more than 80% was filled with invasive plant species, so it was very easy for me to spot all the buckthorn, honeysuckles, and all those things. And so the kids had a little blast of it because they had a lot of different questions about what is invasive species, what, how they get spread, and how do we manage those things. So some of the questions are very interesting to hear back from the kids to know about why these plants are called invasive species, what's the history behind. In 2020, some of the initiatives that I'm in the process of regionalizing all 3 plant health advising office, because all 3 offices have an individual phone number, individual email ID, and they have their own individual website. Now I'm trying to integrate all these things together and create a uniform database spreadsheet where all 3 county master gardeners could log in and enter those consumer data right up there. This makes more efficient use, where I could able to keep a tab on, you know, how the master gardeners are responding to the customer, what type of consumer calls comes in, all one single database spreadsheet. So, and each county will take calls on rotational basis. So, and that will be more efficient in reaching out to the consumers too. We're going to provide this service 6 days a week. So 2 days in Kenosha, 1 day in Racine, 3 days up in Milwaukee. So it's a better customer service for the entire region right up here. And I'm also trying to generate some more regional horticulture programs for Kenosha, Milwaukee, and Racine area. In the past, we used to house in the Landscape Short Course program in Kenosha County, and this program is geared towards green industry people, which is commercial landscapers, commercial nursery growers, lawn service providers, and other horticulture professionals. Now we decided to flip between Milwaukee and Kenosha. Last year was hosted in Kenosha, this year is going to be in Milwaukee, next year we'll be back again in Kenosha, so we can able to cover a wide range of audience in this region. Other program I'm planning on introducing in mid-March is the Intro to Plant Diagnostic Training Program. This program is geared towards the master gardeners, and they desperately need this training program to provide a better service to the consumers. So we are hosting this program both in Kenosha County as well as in Milwaukee County. So we got about approximately 143 people, master gardeners, signed up for this training program. And the other important program I'm planning to host is the Urban Forestry Training Program. According to the Wisconsin DNR, last year, Kenosha, Racine, and Wasatch County lost more than 90% of our ash trees in the urban area. And if you want to put up a percentage, how much asteries we have in the urban area, we got about 21%. So we almost wiped out most of the asteries. It goes back to emerald ash borer and the winter injury. And to make things worse, many consumers, you know, are they filling back with more maples. And so we already have about 20% maples in our urban area. Now we are filling back again with almost 40% with more maples. And the thing is that the Asian longhorn beetle, which is another bad invasive species, which was once detected in Chicago, it re-emerged in Ohio and last year. So it popped up in three different states, one in Massachusetts, one in New York, and one up, down in Ohio. So it's on its way, so we are a bit nervous about it. We are trying to push the residents in this region to diversify the trees to look beyond maples. So as part of the initiative, I'm working with Matt Collins for the Parks Department Director to plant approximately 20 different diverse tree species at the prairie area. So that could be used as an educational tool to showcase to the people, hey, there are a lot of cool species that looks like maples, but different species that you can plant in your urban landscape. At the same time, I'm going to work with the urban foresters in this region to help in promoting some more diverse species and also to offer some training program both for the consumers as well as for the urban foresters. How do we, you know, try to deal with the upcoming invasive species? What are some strategies that we can do to further diversify the urban trees?
This invasive species, do they attack all kinds of maple trees or just certain kinds?
The Asian longhorn beetle attacks multiple tree species, but when you have an urban area which has been filled almost with 40% with maples, its potential, then you're going to have a huge calamity, you know, of, you know, loss of urban trees. Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we took out a couple thousand ash trees from the emerald ash borer Fox River Park and down at Pets. Well, I think it was two or three or thousands of them, so I know that's where we lost a lot of them. But are you saying we're replanting in there a lot of maples? Or, you know,
are we diversifying?
Are we diversifying that?
I haven't looked into the staff, the plan map yet, you know. But what are the reports that I'm getting from the nurseries and from the retail sales staff? The maple sales has been increasing, skyrocketing.
They grow fast.
They grow fast. The prices are comparatively cheaper, and people are still fond of maples. Mm-hmm. For them, when they think about tree, maples, because it's state tree.
It's pretty in the fall, too.
It is pretty in the fall.
And then on the, you said that you guys went to the harbor market like once a month. Didn't you also have something up at the county fair, too? I thought I saw an extension.
There was a while ago, but I think last year they discontinued it. The Master Gardeners chose not to do it.
Also being on the west side, because not everybody from
certainly
the west travels all the way down to the
sure
west.
Sure, good
so
point, yeah.
Like he hardly comes out to the west, so. Yeah. Is there something that we'd be able to look at out here? I guess, but, mm-hmm, you know, as long as it was well advertised.
Good feedback,
that,
yeah.
You know, we're here, because I think more people would utilize some of this information, or at least get it and be able to call them up or, you know, get information. I've been looking for lawn stuff here now, so,
you know.
We have a resource for
you.
You're
welcome to reach out to us. We'll
yeah
be happy to provide some information,
yeah,
you know. Yeah.
Well, I think people should know that it's available to them. You know, just walk up basis, check it all out. It'd be interesting if we could do something at least on I guess we can't do it monthly because we don't have a harbor market out here, but, you know, we got a flea market.
That's a big one. Yeah.
Question on that beetle. Are they going after oak trees also, or?
It attacks maples, white pines, and multiple other species, including oaks too. But, you know, when you have majority of the trees, you know, filled with maples, you know, they are the easiest one, you know, get succumbed to those things, okay? But they do attack other tree species, too.
What were the other ones? The one, fuzzies,
the gypsy moth is that.
Gypsy moth, yeah.
The caterpillar one. The gypsy moth caterpillar, you know, usually attacks in spring, but thank God, the last few years, you know, we had a wet spring. Yeah. So when we have a wet spring, the naturally that is a pathogen that has been released by Mother Nature because of the rain, and we call entomophagous pathogen, and that really kills the gypsy moth caterpillar. So when the gypsy moth gets into a medium to large size, they completely get desiccated because the pathogen works inside its body and ruptures its digestive system and mummifies it. Now, the DNR program, they also, in the last decade or so, they have been also releasing the NPV virus, which is a nucleopolyhedrin virus, which specifically attacks the gypsy moth caterpillar. That is also very successful too. So with this combination of these two strategies, we are seeing a lot of decline in gypsy moth population. So,
an aerial spray?
Aerial spray, yeah.
Right.
Okay, food-wise, there are a lot of tiny words, so I will summarize. First, I'll just, it looked better on my little laptop than I'm right here. As most of you know, and I'll just provide a reminder, our programming and delivery models look a little bit different than other colleagues. Our funding is different. We're 100% federally funded to reach low and limited income populations, or at least 50%, that's our target for that audience. So we do that by working with multiple agencies that serve those audiences, including income eligible schools, Head Starts, early educations, subsidized senior residences, shelters, food pantries. We work with the Y, we work with Boys and Girls Clubs, and many of these are multiple year long, well-established relationships. So we tend to do more repeat events or series because in nutrition education, that's what the data shows is effective in both intent to change and actual behavior change in eating, cooking, and eating habits. So 2019, and this is the, I'll remind you, we work in both Racine and Kenosha, so these numbers are for the whole area. And then one of my roles is to make sure that from a budget standpoint, that's about even. So we reached 7,700 learners total. Those are unduplicated. And then because we work in series, the number on the bottom left, that 21,961, those are teaching contacts. So the average is about 3 lessons per person, but that varies depending on which curricula, which age group we're addressing. On the right, you'll see our demographic breakdown, which is always interesting. And then some of my favorite data to look at is the secondary data. So it's great when fourth graders tell us that they love us, but I'm gonna listen a little more carefully to the teachers and the parents about what they've observed. As far as changes, and 60% of teachers actually made health behavior changes of their own in addition to witnessing or observing changes with the kiddos. And then what is exciting to me about that is they become healthier models. They're bringing healthier foods, they're talking about nutrition in reading, math, science, other programs. We provide supplemental materials, and so it just gets a broader view, which is really neat. We received back 256 parents' evaluations, which is one of the highest return rates in the state for our area. So we focused on providing that in multiple ways, online surveys, in paper, friendly reminders, and I think that push did really well. More than 50% of respondents had great things to say, including their child was willing to try more new foods, eat more fruits and vegetables, and washing their hands properly. So again, that's sort of just a school-age youth focus. Instead of having a different slide about what we're going to do in 2020, I have another slide, but programming pretty much stays the same. Oftentimes, we'll see shifts in our partners. based on funding or who leaves this organization and goes to this organization because they were sort of our champion for our programs. We have always had a waiting list since I have been working with Extension, and so we try to work where the partners are actively helping us be successful, and sometimes that falls off the wayside and we do some shifting. So more of the same of this in 2020, clearly, and then if the next slide talks more about our PSE work, which stands for Policy, Systems, and Environmental Change, and really the focus right now is promoting increased access. So there's the whole component of knowledge. A person might have some knowledge, what they would do, but they might not have transportation, or their corner store is filled with junk food, and they have many barriers, sort of similar to, you know, what Mary might face in teaching her financial problems. If housing is horrible, and if you know, food access is horrible, a person might have the knowledge but not have the capacity, right, in the environmental sense. So we also work actively to try to make improvements, and sometimes that's reaching a new audience. Like we reached teens for the first time this past year, which was super fun. Actually, it was. We were all nervous, but they turned out to be wonderful. And we did a few series. We're used to the younger ones that were a little more receptive, but these guys were very receptive and loved the hands-on cooking part because a lot of them had never made a salad or a grilled cheese sandwich or whatever. So this is an exciting opportunity. Lincoln Middle School and then the Kenosha County Human Service Department Families First program were our pilot partners for that teen audience. And Families First, not sure who knows what about that, but they provide wraparound services for families whose teens have been diagnosed with mental health challenges. So they need additional support. And the cooking was a great program. One of the kiddos, after he took our class, got a job at the Italian club, and he's really like into it now, wants to go on and do culinary arts. So we love those types of stories. We provided training to One Hub Food Pantry volunteers to improve using our Safe and Healthy Food Pantry toolkit. And then, so that creates, ideally, a systems change. So they consider maybe a little more carefully about donations, about what food groups are handed out as they're passing out food to their patrons. And then the big hullabaloo in the last handful of months, both in Racine, but this very recently in Kenosha, is the kickoff of the mobile market. I'll just pass around this one flyer if anyone wants to get on our list for updates. We'll certainly share. But this is a collaborative effort between the Hunger Task Force in Milwaukee, the Sharing Center, Piggly Wiggly, and then whichever organization signs up to be a site. And there's a strategy. It's sort of a little bit complex about how they're determining which sites they'll go to. But the food is fresh. It's only fresh produce, fresh dairy, and fresh meat. So again, that challenge of this corner store only has Cheetos and soda, you know, this provides an opportunity. They also take the FoodShare/Quest card and debit or credit cards. So they don't deal with cash, which is awesome in my mind because they're going into sometimes some volatile neighborhoods. And it's just been amazing, especially the senior sites that they're stopping at. They pull right up to the front door, and the seniors come out where they had mobility issues or transportation challenges, and they get their fresh stuff, and it's really great. Anyone can shop there. So if you're ever in the vicinity, I encourage you to pop in and check it out. That's our sort of new, exciting thing.
And do they have a concern in the rougher areas of security? I know there's any cash, but just, you know, do they bring extra security in for it or anything like
they
that?
Were work with volunteers, and then their truck driver and his assistant are, I wouldn't mess with them, like, you know, just based on what I've seen.
They're probably going to be outgunned.
You know?
Well, it's like a semi they bring in. It's a big...
You never want that to happen because it can ruin
right.
anything.
So, like, bringing the bookmobile in?
Bigger. Yeah, it's like a NASCAR trailer and a big old truck.
So the
old
people with mobility issues, you know, wheelchairs, walkers, and all that, no problem getting in? Or?
Well, they don't get in, but the volunteers take their order.
Okay.
And then they go shop for them, and it's like one way. It's like they go in the door on the back, they go through, they check out, and then they come out the door this way. So it's all pretty regulated. Mm-hmm. We're trying to have support
and
there.
I did hear something on the news about this. I don't think it was from but I don't know, a couple of weeks ago it was on the Milwaukee station about how they're using this program on the market.
Yeah, we have to fill that need. I mean, if stores are going to close and they don't want to be in the neighborhoods, we still need to address the need of having fresh foods in those neighborhoods. Yeah. So I think this is a really innovative, exciting way. And one of the ways that we promote is by working on our networks and our distribution lists, and it's pretty exciting to see all send it to principals and directors of all the organizations that we work with, but then our educator team sends it to multiple teachers near where the market's going to pull up, and then they print it for families, or one dietitian at Frater printed it for her patients. So that word of mouth and really just spreading the word is one of the ways we're trying to increase use of that resource so it doesn't go away.
Are they decently priced?
25% off the price you would get at Piggly Wiggly, and the quality has been superb. And what the guy said who's driving the
truck. I don't know what that is.
Okay, well, check it out. But yeah, so it's been very nice every time I've gone in.
From the New York Task Force?
No, it comes from Piggly Wiggly. And they load it the back. He said it's freshest because we're pulling it out of the back. They don't pluck it out of the produce aisle. So they have first pick, they load that trailer up, they haul it out. They're trying to do like two stops per day when they come to a particular area. So it's just a neat thing, and we're pushing this a lot to try to promote. Probably a lot more of the same in expanding our networks, expanding access to healthy food. And then, as Lee mentioned, we're here to respond. So if something crops up, that'll be our new crisis du jour, and we'll go handle it.
All right. Ready for the next one?
Okay, so I have 2019-2020 here on this slide, and I think what I'm going to do is follow the same project from 2019 to 2020, as they're pretty fluid at the moment. So for 2019, one of the major projects that I worked on was with the Sustainable Kenosha County, which has members from different departments and divisions all across county facilities. So this is a great opportunity for everyone to come together and talk about what's happening in their divisions and departments, and share it with individuals in other buildings that may have no idea what's happening in purchasing or public health. So we are doing quarterly newsletters, and this here is our quarterly newsletter from January. These are the types of things that we talk about in the meetings, radon test kits and tree orders. One of the things I'm really looking forward to in 2020 is on the back there. It's the Kenosha County SWAP program. This is something that was born out of the extension moving out of our office and realizing we have a lot of stuff. We have a lot of stuff.
Gems of stuff.
That we don't need. That probably nobody needs. But the idea was born that there are all these things that somebody might want. And, you know, we have boxes and boxes of binders. And another department throughout the county might need boxes and boxes and boxes of binders. So what the idea is, we're going to have a SharePoint folder, which is being created right now, where people can post surplus goods that they have in their division, whether that be chairs, whether that be binders, or coffee pods, anything that is still can be reused by another department. And also, we will have people who have needs. So if they're looking for the binders, the furniture, the chairs, whatever, they can go seek that out. And the idea is to, number one, be able to reuse these products before they go to auction. And number two, to reduce the financial cost that some of these departments might take on by purchasing new. So we're...
I can't believe we haven't, the county hasn't had this for years.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really exciting. And there are so many closets tucked away in these all these buildings that have all kinds of gems.
Maybe a little job.
Products for someone else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That just have a thick layer of dust on them. And underneath that dust, I think, you know, there's some great opportunity there. So that's something that we're working out the kinks and how that's going to look for posters and people who are looking to acquire these things and transportation of these things. Then last year I presented to you all on the Kenosha Racine Recycles website and got your feedback on what was working, what needed some updating. The site was renewed for another 6 months, and at that time in July we were reevaluating the future of it, you know, the total long-term future of it, because Extension has been paying for hosting fees every year, and any updates, including feedback that we have gotten, costs $85 an hour just to do some of these programming updates. So I did some research on other potential equivalent hosting sites or organizations in the Kenosha area, and they offered kind of the same deal. I did come across the Wisconsin Recycling Markets Directory, and these are tiny, tiny pictures here, I recognize. The top one, you...
I can roll it around.
Yeah, you may recognize, was the homepage of the Kenosha Racine Recycles, and then it's discontinuing, and it's going to be, the information is going to be housed in other sites that Kenosha County will not have to finance. So the two main features of that site were the map feature, where you could click on, you know, the drop-down box, have your item that you wanted to recycle, and then you would have the features of where you could go recycle that. So this moves it to a statewide directory that's already in existence. The DNR funds this directory, and UW Green Bay, there's an intern in an environmental institute there that does the annual maintenance of this site. So this is a really fantastic directory because, number one, it already exists. Number two, it's statewide. So we have, not just statewide, there's also some recycling outlets that are Northern Illinois. So for our community, this is a greater opportunity for people to be able to recycle. And then it has more...
options.
Thank you. Thanks. items of waste that will be on there. So that's in the process right now. The site, we still have the site address links to the Kenosha County Extension page, so people who have been using this site will still have, they'll have the information that they need through this transition. And in 2020, I have on the right column, it's not on the left, is the Census Kenosha County Complete Count Committee, which I think some people here might be a little familiar with. So there is a county committee in addition to a City of Kenosha committee, and the county committee will be looking at all the other municipalities outside of the city, right? So we're looking at reaching hard-to-count populations for the census. Kenosha and Wisconsin have really high rates of response in the 2010 census, and we want to even have higher response rates than before. So we're looking at trying to identify which target populations we have in the area that might need additional help and outreach. And I think we're doing a pretty good job. We have a lot of small pockets. The data that's available to identify different populations is by census tract or block, and so it doesn't really get down, you know, as narrow as we would like it to get down to be able to reach specific households. But, you know, if we're talking about general groups of renters, we can target rental units, larger rental units. If we're talking about senior populations, those are harder to reach populations. We can target, you know, where seniors live. We're also working with the Sharing Center out west here so that we can target other, like a variety of populations that might be lower income. And so that's pretty exciting. That's ongoing for the next several months. And then in 2021, we'll have the redistricting aspect of it. So for workforce development, have been doing the resource fairs at Kenosha Correctional, and those are now, there's 2 months on and 2 months off. We've lessened the frequency of those events, and so now instead of reaching individuals leaving at 90 days or less, we're reaching individuals leaving within 120 days. So we're bringing in a variety of different resources from Kenosha area, Racine area, and Milwaukee, as about a third of each municipalities are represented when people leave. So one third of the individuals are staying in the Kenosha area. So like Mary said, you know, a lot of the individuals do have access to work currently and the option to continue those positions, but some of them don't, or they're moving to a different part of the county. So I try to bring in a variety of different vendors that can assist the guys when they're returning back to their communities, and whether that's direct employment options or employment training or employment certifications, giving them at least that initial piece of information of where they can go look and access these resources when they get out is the first step. So be continuing that into 2020 and bringing more vendors, variety of vendors. I have somebody directly from the workforce board who will be coming at our next resource fair, and then trying to bring in more employers that might offer certification specifically to re-entrants who have a lot more limitations on the jobs that they can do. So we can't just come in and say, hey, you should be this, you could be a nurse, you could be all of these things, because there are many things that they have consequences that they can. So those are just a few of the things I've been doing and will continue to do.
Thank you.
All right, so Amy unfortunately went home ill and decided not to share her fever with us, so thank you very much, Amy. So in the interest of time, I think we'll have her share her update with you a different time, unless there's something in particular. And this is true with Vicki as well. She's on family medical leave for the through February, which leads to the next agenda item. That's what I was trying to look up on my phone, attendance. So again, I'll have her give an update to you when she returns in March as well. And I think that's the last one. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right, moving on. Youth and governance, including meeting attendance.
Yeah, I just noticed that, and so that's what I was trying to get a sense. Vicki only sent me the Human Services and Public Works attendance, and so I don't know how you want Public Works. Those were 67% and 77%, and then Human Services, that's I think the committee that probably has the most challenge, and so I don't know how you want to handle that or work through that. Sydney, I don't believe, was able to attend any meetings because of a health issue.
Right, right.
And so I think we just stopped contacting. We
yes.
weren't having luck with that, and let her just take care of her health. And then Kayara Henley, it looks like she's at 4 of 8 meetings as of February.
Okay. I do know Human Services. The chairman, Supervisor Brady, has been very adamant about, I know we have some health issues with one of the students.
That's who she's talking about.
That's
right. And then
Sydney,
Kiara as well.
Kiara.
We've made clear to her. So I do know it is the wish of the committee to have them both replaced.
Both of them?
Yeah. We did indicate to Kiara as well, and I know her mentor has tried reaching out to her as well with not much success. It's not something that the committee takes joy in doing, but there are
sure.
students out there who the committee thinks would really take heed of the opportunities. We kind of wanted to know where we wanted to go from this committee, seeing that I'm on both.
Right.
We don't know what PDEC wants us to do, if they want us to draft a letter from committee to this committee.
No, I don't think so. No, I think it's really working with Supervisor Decker and Extension. What I don't know is what Vicki usually will follow up and also try to work with the youth, and that's the information I don't have.
Okay,
is
what, do you want to follow up?
I'll try as best I can.
Yes, as
with Vicki. I know she's out through the end of the month,
okay.
But I'll see if I can get anything from her.
Okay.
As far as
there's
what's happening.
Only a couple committees meeting this month. So.
And then I'll check with the other committees.
Okay.
I know for sure Human Services was one that both members were having challenges attending, but we'll also check in on the other committees and then touch base with you on that.
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right, number four, UW Extension Educator Program Updates.
So I have the director update.
Okay.
And so it does appear that we actually are going to be moving next week, so long as the furniture arrives intact on Friday.
Are you getting them out of a closet somewhere?
Well, the initial furniture was on a truck on a pallet, and the straps broke and went all over, and so it delayed it by a few weeks. And so that's why, until I see what it looks like and that it's all good. But next Tuesday is when we begin moving across the hall, if that all goes well. In January, I sent you the quarterly reports from staff, so hopefully you receive those. And I just sent you some events and programs that are upcoming, if there's any you want to sit in on and observe and see. It also has the staff member to get in touch with. I already mentioned that Vicki is out on leave, and then Beth is on leave through March, also on family medical leave.
Through the end of March?
Through the end of March, yeah. And her son's new name is Everett. He's adorable. And then the other things that have been happening, again, as we shift to UW-Madison, a lot of policies, they're realizing you have all these volunteers, and there's just a lot of things that we're sorting out and getting in alignment. So that's taken a chunk of my time. We have a new nutrition educator, Nazreen, what's her last name?
Ismali.
Begins on next Monday. So we're very excited to have a successful recruitment there. And then we just had a recent resignation, Caitlin, who's our horticulture program coordinator, working with Master Gardeners. She just gave us notice, and she's done on Friday. So it's a very quick turn. And so I'm having discussions now with the state on next steps and how that will work. But she's going out to Seattle to coordinate Master Gardeners out there, and that's the birth of Master Gardener program, started in Seattle. So that's what she'll be doing. And then back to youth and governance, 134 youth were nominated, so they'll be receiving their applications. Hopefully we get a high application rate as well. So we'll keep in touch that way.
All right. Are we done?
Yes.
All right.
That's it. Sorry.
Big room.